This is AgriPulse Daybreak for Friday, February 27th, brought to you by Watkinson Miller and Dairy Management Incorporated. Good morning, I'm Jeff Nally. Here's today's headlines. Groups highlight USMCA benefits. Border to stay closed, Rollins says, and RVOs destined to go down. Groups push USMCA merits here at Commodity Classic. As a review of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement approaches, groups have been using this year's Commodity Classic to highlight the deal's benefits for U.S. farmers and North American competitiveness writ large. The Agricultural Coalition for USMCA hosted a breakfast event on the sidelines of the conference yesterday. During a panel discussion, international trade lawyer Mateo Diego Fernandez Adreda argued that preserving a trilateral deal allows for integrated supply chains to boost North American exports. U.S. grain is used to raise Mexican calves, which are brought to the U.S. to fatten and then exported to other continents as beef, he said. The deal in its current form, he argued, quote, ensures that the region remains a dominant economic force. Earlier in the week, Farmers for Free Trade hosted an event in the courtyard of the Kempton Santa Hotel where leaders signed the USMCA's precursor, the North American Free Trade Agreement. The event was in the first in a series of roundtable discussions with the group hosting in the run-up to the review starting in July, further events slated for Iowa, Wisconsin, and other farm states. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins is making clear she isn't close to being ready to start reopening the border with Mexican cattle. Speaking at a news conference at Commodity Classic yesterday, she said the ban on Mexican livestock would not be lifted anytime soon. When the New World screwworm outbreak does recede, USDA will look first at reopening a port of entry in Arizona, then New Mexico, she said. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall asking Rollins in a letter this week to keep the border closed. Duvall pointed to reports that Mexico was dealing with over 600 active cases of the pest. He also noted the northernmost active case is only 70 miles from the U.S. border. Take note, Rollins says the signs are very encouraging that China will go beyond its initial commitment of purchasing 12 million metric tons of soybeans. Rollins noted, quote, the president had a call with Xi Jinping a week ago and brought up soybeans again. You can read about Rollins' speech at Commodity Classic at AgriPulse.com. Former USDA chief economist Seth Meyer has a gloomy take on the pending final 26-27 biofuel blending rules from EPA. Meyer, speaking yesterday at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, said the EPA's proposal last year, calling for the highest ever target for biomass-based diesel and other policy wins for the crop-based renewable fuel industry, was, quote, peak aggressiveness by policy riders. Everything I've heard since then has been a reduction, said Meyer, who now leads the Food and Agriculture Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri. We'll have more AgriPulse Daybreak after this.
Located in Washington, D.C., Watkinson Miller has been providing legal services to the agriculture industry for more than 30 years. The attorneys at Watkinson Miller possess a unique combination of knowledge, skills, and experience working with commodity boards and their partner organizations and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Watkinson Miller is proud to serve the agriculture community by delivering top quality legal services that achieve cost effective results.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Daybreak. Ag economists here at Commodity Classic weighed in on the biggest wild cards for 2026. American Soybean Association Chief Economist Scott Gerrold cited broad uncertainty over regulations like EPA's blending rules and regenerative ag regulations as a part of the 45Z biofuel tax credit. Another big unknown is how this year's midterm election might affect policy, Gerrold said. That could have ramifications on ag.
National Corn Growers Association Chief Economist Krista Swanson noted the perpetual unknown of farming, the weather. Swanson, Geralt, and Meyer also all agreed on trade as a major wild card. There's been a lot of trade frameworks and deals that have been done, but on some of those, we're still not sure what the market implications could be for corn or ethanol or DDGS, even the livestock opportunity, Swanson said. So seeing what materializes, and if those develop into a major new market, but there's uncertainty that can go either way on that front. As for Meyer, the big question on trade, does any of these deals follow through or do they bear fruit? Is there something there that provides you a little long run, underlying growth? Maybe there's some opportunity here. The administrator of the USDA's Farm Service Agency says the department should have a new base acres implemented this summer. Speaking at Commodity Classic, Bill Beam said, quote, "It's going to be a big help to some producers that have come from parts of the country that didn't normally grow our commodity crops." Beam owns a former dairy farm in Pennsylvania that only has 3 of 125 acres eligible for commodity programs. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act allowed USDA to add up to 30 million new base acres. The chief of the Natural Resources Conservation Service, Aubrey Betancourt, said her agency will be shortly conducting field trials of a new integrated field tool, a digital platform designed to quickly assist farmers in obtaining whole farm plans and identifying your resource concerns. She said NRCS also would be updating conservation practice standards. A federal judge has ordered the Army Corps of Engineers to increase spill at dams along the Snake River in eastern Washington, the latest action in a long legal feud over declining salmon populations on the river. In his preliminary injunction, U.S. District Judge Michael Simon in Portland, Oregon, expressed disappointment with USACE plans to reduce the amount of water that spills through the dams compared to previous years. Instead, he ordered the agency to implement spill levels comparable to 2024 and 2025, as well as maintaining 2025 water level reservoirs. Michelle Hennings, executive director of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers, criticized the decision. "We believe the court order to increase spill and lower reservoir elevations is simply manipulating the river system in a way that will appease environmental activists, but in the long term, threaten the overall viability of the Columbia Snake River system," she said in a statement. Simon's decision is just the latest in a long-standing dispute that has pitted tribes, environmentalists, and fishermen concerned about salmon declines against farmers, shippers, and energy companies dependent on the navigation and transportation benefits of the dams that they provide. Here's today's final word. We'll see how his markup goes. That Senate Ag Committee Chair John Bozeman of Arkansas, when asked about his committee's plan to consider its own farm bill, Bozeman said the timing would depend in part on how the House Ag Committee proceeds next week on its version of the legislation. You can read our report at agripulse.com. Well, that's Daybreak for this Friday, February 27th, brought to you by Watkinson Miller and Dairy Management Incorporated. For the latest news out of Washington, D.C., visit agripulse.com. For AgriPulse Daybreak, I'm Jack Nally.